Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. This is episode 11, and today's guest is Haya Kehlani, who writes a newsletter called The Deep Dive. Each week, she creates 5 YouTube video essays for an audience of 13,000 subscribers and counting. Most of that audience found her on TikTok, where she's built a following of 92,000 and routinely goes viral, unpacking the same video essays she creates in her newsletter. We spent an hour talking about organic growth, gatekeeping, and just letting people enjoy things, or not. As always, thank you for listening and enjoy. But yeah, I guess to start, tell me, who are you and what do you do?
Yeah, so my name is Haya Kehlani. I run and write and pretty much solely operate a newsletter called The Deep Dive, which is a weekly newsletter with 5 curated video essay recommendations every week. The topics really include things around culture, pop culture, internet, social media, entertainment, just like anything that kind of happens in our day-to-day life and the things that we experience in our day-to-day, and kind of like wanting to learn a little bit more about the kind of hidden meaning behind that. Yeah, I mean, that's basically kind of top line what The Deep Dive is. The Deep Dive also has a paid subscription model, which is pretty new, called The Rabbit Hole, which provides subscribers with access to The Deep Dive's searchable playlist, which is basically just like every single video essay recommendation ever from The Deep Dive, and also weekly subscriber only posts of kind of just like, you know, rants and ramblings of other things happening in the space that I think needs to, you know, have something be said about it. So that's kind of top line, you know, who I am and what The Deep Dive is.
Yeah, maybe I missed it, but I feel like you explained it more as like this media brand rather than directly like a newsletter or a TikTok page or something. Is that how you think of it? Like, is it a newsletter first, or is it more of just like a media concept?
Yeah, so for me, you know, where I'm at now with The Deep Dive, I definitely see it as it's a newsletter first platform, which uses TikTok as kind of a funnel, but we can talk about TikTok a little bit more once that comes up. But yeah, I mean, I think in terms of it becoming like a larger media kind of like platform, I think that's something that, you know, would be amazing and would be a great like kind of long-term goal for myself. But right now it really, you know, for me, it really is like newsletter first, but it is kind of an interesting, like unique approach to a newsletter in the sense that it's like, you know, it's a recommendation, like a recommendation newsletter. It, you know, has like shares curated video essays, but also at the same time, like is like an inside look into just kind of like my personal thoughts on, you know, the videos itself and the topics that they're covering. And I think that's something that The Deep Dive has really evolved into, kind of this place where, you know, it's like, I'm sharing my recommendations and I'm also kind of sharing a little bit of personal insight into why I chose the videos that I did and why I enjoy them and why I like, and, or am interested in certain topics that I like and am interested in.
Yeah. No, I think the curation aspect of it is really interesting to me. And I've interviewed a few people who do different things, but like also curation. Like a couple of weeks ago was Ariel Nissenblatt, who has the podcast recommendation newsletter, which is also like 5 podcasts a week sourced from a guest, some overlap to yours. Or the person who's coming out this week is Ryan Broderick, his Garbage Day. And that's like more different than Ariel's was, but again, kind of curating stuff from the internet and putting it out there. And I think I'm in particular like really drawn to curation newsletters. Mm. Obviously other people are too, right? And I think it's like a function of like the algorithm, and you know, people get tired of algorithmic recommendations, people want taste back, and like it's fun to consume another person's taste, which is like when you've like put an edge on it, as you do. And like I think the appeal for a creator of making a curation product is like you're already consuming the stuff, you're interested in it, you want to talk about it. I think I read too that like when you started, you really liked video essays, but you didn't have any friends in real life who like wanted to talk about them with you. So it was like a way for you to like make your consumption more active and again, put an edge on it. But all that being said, what does it mean to be a curator for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting. And I think this is a question I ask myself all the time. One of the first things that come to mind when it comes to like what it means to be a curator and having that be part, like such a big part of your content creation and like newsletter creation, of course, is like kind of constantly towing that line between what's the content that I personally enjoy and what's the content that my audience will enjoy. And a lot of the time that overlap is really big, right? Like, I think at this point I've been able to gain an audience that like really kind of gets it. They know what I like and they know why I like it and they share that love with me. But it's also, you know, kind of that thing of it's like, oh, well, I find, you know, when I find a different types of content, maybe a video that isn't necessarily what I would usually gravitate towards, but in this specific instance was really interesting to me. It's like, it's kind of like towing that line. Cause like you want to be able to kind of expand outside of that, but you also want to keep in mind that your audience, like they like what they like and they want to kind of grow with you, but they also want to see the stuff that they want to see. So I think that's kind of the big thing. And I think kind of going back to what you were talking about, the algorithm, what's so interesting is that the deep dive really came out of, for me specifically, a frustration with the YouTube algorithm specifically. Anybody who's on YouTube and spends a lot of time on YouTube has definitely complained about the algorithm at some point over the years. And my personal frustrations with it, where it was like, there were so many creators that I loved and types of videos that I really enjoyed watching, but it felt like I was kind of just seeing the same thing over and over. And if I hadn't clicked on a video or I wasn't interested in watching it, it would keep being recommended to me. And then on top of that, if I, you know, decided to one-off watch something completely random one day, my entire like explore page or like would just kind of be skewed entirely. So I think like it was really kind of born out of that thing of like kind of going back to like there were only so many people in my life, and frankly the vast majority of people in my life like didn't relate to this type of content that I was consuming. So anytime I did hear somebody say like, oh, there's this video that I watched and it's really interesting, that would be like, I mean, immediately I'd be beelining to like watch it. So that was like really where it came from. I was like, you know, if somebody was doing this for me, I would want that. Like if somebody was out there just telling me 5 videos that I should watch, like whether or not there would be anything that I would ever be interested in watching in, like that's what I would want. I would want someone to just be like, what do you think? Like, what do you like?
Yeah. That what you're talking about like, oh, if somebody brings up a video, this is something I was thinking about as I was writing this week's issue. And maybe you can relate. I think we're about the same age. Like, back in like 2006 or something, like an aunt would like forward me an email that like was like some weird thing she saw online and yeah, such. And I've been thinking about like what you do or what like these other people I've interviewed do as like an evolved version of that, where that's like pre-algorithm, where it's like, yeah, look at this cool thing I found, check it out. But what you're doing is that, but like with analysis and like media criticism involved, which not necessarily a question in there, more just my observation on curation content is. But I do want to say, so video essays, that's what you cover. And like that touches so many things. And that's like your way into like so much cultural criticism across so many different things. I don't watch a lot of video essays. I read a lot of essays, listen to podcasts, watch movies. I consume so much content. Video essays just don't happen to be one of them. So tell me, define for me what a video essay is.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this is a question that seems like it would be very straightforward. Be like, these are all the things that make a video essay, but the lines are much more blurred than anyone honestly would probably realize. I think the best way that I've been able to describe it is like almost if you took like a tie between like a thesis, like a college thesis and a documentary. Like if you imagine that there's like some sort of like in between, if there's a Venn diagram of the two of them, if there's like an in-between space, like that's what a video essay would be. I think there are a lot of video essays that really kind of veer more into the academic space. They're very heavily, you know, all the video essays I watch for the most part are very heavily researched, but like researched in a way that is like very in line with like academic standards. But then also there are a lot of video essays that are just someone who, you know, has a background or understanding in, you know, like, it could be anything, right? It could just be like media or pop culture or philosophy or, you know, whatever it might be, kind of like sharing their thoughts on a situation and kind of just like spitballing. I think a lot of times creators, they're so natural on camera that we think they're kind of just like, you know, saying whatever. But, you know, a lot of the time these videos are heavily scripted and they know what they're going to say. But there's a wide range of what a video essay is. But I feel like that's like my best, like the best way to kind of encapsulate all of it, because it is such a, it's a pretty growing, like large and growing sector, like subsector within YouTube.
Yeah. And I mean, in terms of length, they're anywhere from like, they could be quite short, probably even less than 10 minutes. You could qualify something as a video essay to like multiple hours, right?
Totally. Yeah. I've seen up to like 10 hours, longer than 10 hours. It was an April Fool's bit, but I saw one that was 38 hours.
Wow. What about like the people creating them? Like, are most video essayists like perennial, where it's like, you know, every week there's a new one, or every month or whatever, or is it like more, I'm sure it's a mix, but like, yeah, what I guess is like the creator meta of like, who are these people? How are they engaging? Like, how, like, what are their followings like? What does it mean to be a video creator in the current state, the video essay creator, a video essayist in the current state of that?
Yeah, totally. Well, yeah. And I think, you know, going to your first question about like the frequency of these posts, I mean, like you said, it's completely, there's a huge range. I mean, there are creators who are able to churn out, you know, content every few weeks or once a month. And then there are creators who like really kind of their whole thing is they put their head down for like a year working on one video and they come out with videos once a year. Similar thing, like you'll have creators that come out with videos once every 6 months. So you really do see such a wide range of that. And in terms of their audience, I mean, of course, I can't speak from the position of a video essayist. I think that's like not 100% insight that I have. But from what I've seen, their audiences are like highly engaged, highly looking forward to their next post. You know, they really do have communities, like really dedicated communities that, you know, really love the creators that they love. But from what I've seen, are also really looking for, you know, kind of like a, if you like this, then you'll like this kind of situation. It's like they'll be tried, you know, they'll kind of be loyal to their tried and true creators, but they also want to hear more, you know, if it's like, oh, this is a really interesting take on whatever topic this is, and I want to hear what somebody else has to say about that. So yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of like my observation of video essay audiences, is that it's pretty, like, they're very loyal, very like excited about their creators. And honestly, from what I've seen, like generally a very positive community. There's criticism, you know, as there should be in a lot of spaces, but it always seems to be very constructive. It's not like a lot of internet spaces that can get extremely toxic.
Yeah. I mean, I think that makes sense too, given that it's such a like high effort thing to consume. Like, it's not just like a short form video where you can just watch it and drop a mean comment or whatever. I'm curious about your media diet. Like, obviously you're finding five of these every week and putting them out there. I'm sure you're watching much more. How many hours of YouTube do you think you watch a week?
Oh boy. I don't even know. I mean, like in the couple of days leading up to when the newsletter goes out, at least a combined 24 hours just in those days leading up. And I think, and also even after the newsletter goes out and I kind of like, you know, have some downtime, I'm still watching YouTube. Maybe it's not necessarily like, you know, looking for those curated like recommendations that I'll put in the next newsletter, but just kind of seeing what's out there, seeing what YouTube is like in terms of my media diet. Like, it is my main form, like my main choice of entertainment. It always has been. You know, I like TV, but it's never been, you know,
you say always has been like always since you're like a kid kind of.
Yeah. I mean, so so YouTube kind of like really, I mean, YouTube started when I was, God, what was it, like 2005? So I was like 10, 11 years old. Mm-hmm. So like I was kind of engaging it in the way that like a lot of people were, kind of like what you were saying, right? It was like, somebody would be like, oh, look at this video and you'd kind of watch it. I'd say that I got really interested in YouTube and specifically just like the niche corners of YouTube in high school. So around 2008 to 2012. And then in college is when I started being really fascinated with, kind of just like the vlogger scene that was coming up, not in a way that I was like enjoying as somebody that was part of the target audience. It was more so like, this is an interesting thing that's happening. Like, you know, I was almost watching it as like an observer at that point. And then when I discovered the video essay category, I was like, yes, this is what I've been looking for. Cause I've always been somebody that was like gravitated towards like educational content, things like documentaries and, you know, and I'm also not a huge reader. My attention span doesn't really allow for it. So videos were obviously like a really great way for me to like learn all that new information without having to like really force myself to focus and like read a book, even though I probably should.
Mm-hmm. No, it's all information. Have you ever made a video essay?
Oh God, no. Oh my gosh. People ask me this and I just like the amount of effort and research and just like prior knowledge and time. Like I truly have the utmost respect for the people who make these videos and like the editing and the scripting. It's something that like, it's like, I so look up to people that like are able to put that time in and do that. And I think at least at this point, like that's something that I don't know that I see myself much more as like a consumer mm-hmm. of these videos as somebody, as opposed to somebody who would make them. But I mean, all the respect, it's a lot of work. And I actually don't know how some of them do it as much as they do.
It's insane. I mean, just skimming through a bunch of the ones in your archive, it's like, yeah, I mean, it's like 45 minute things. So well researched, like definitely took like at least 40 hours of like, at minimum for so many of these to make. Okay, but you don't make video essays, but you do make TikToks. And on your deep dive TikTok account, your first one was uploaded the same day you sent your first issue of the newsletter. Had you been like TikToking before that on like a private personal account or something? Or was that like, all right, I guess I'm going to try TikToking for the very first time?
Yeah, I mean, I think like I had a personal account. I think I've long since lost it. I haven't logged into it in a really long time now, but I had a personal TikTok account before starting the deep dive one. And I, you know, I'd post ever so often, but I always really enjoyed the format of TikTok and being able to just kind of like share your thoughts and, you know, share what you've learned. If there's something I want to say, this is like the way that kind of seems the most natural for me as somebody who just kind of like, I just kind of like to, you know, learn things and talk about them and kind of make connections, and not necessarily in a way that's so structured or so formal and like, you know, frankly requires like a lot of knowledge of like video editing, kind of like what we were saying about video essays, but kind of in a way that is a lot more casual and just kind of like, here are my thoughts. What are yours? So that was something that I always was really interested in. And so when I kind of like, you know, came up with the concept of the deep dive, it seemed like a natural way to kind of get people on board. And I knew, and I'd already seen like some posts about these YouTube videos and kind of saying like, oh, video essays I watch to help me go to sleep. And it's like kind of those carousel ones. So I was like, okay, well, like what if there was somebody who was like talking about these? Because even just seeing the screenshot, I'm like, I don't know what this video is about. I don't know who's making it. I don't know what the point they're making. So it was kind of like adding a little bit more of like a human face to those kinds of like, that was my initial idea, like those like carousels of like roundups of video essays that people like watching. So that was like where the idea came from.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It's like looking at your TikToks too, I think it only took like 8 TikToks or so, 5 weeks for you to get your first million view TikTok. And I don't know if it was right away or if it happened later, but I thought that's really impressive. And you have now 92,000 followers, 2.6 million likes, and like a bunch of million plus view videos, which is really impressive. I've tried to do the TikTok thing before at an old job and I hated it. I sucked at it. But also what's like amazing to me is like so many of your videos are like, could not be simpler. It's just like you CapCut green screened and like shrunk down and like talking over for 3 minutes over a screenshot of one of these videos. And one of the first, like your most recent, like really big view one, I think it was 1.7 million views. It was just that, like no changes in the shot. So that's amazing. Did you have like a TikTok I mean, you just kind of laid it out a bit, but was there like any particular strategy where you're like, I'm going to try this or that, or you were just like, I'm just going to like do these kind of like kind of do, it's what you're doing in the newsletter. You're just like taught, you're just saying it on video. We're just like, I'm just going to do that and see what happens. And then it like very quickly started working. Cause I think now it's been like over a year since you got, I mean, almost every video you put out gets at least 10,000 views, which is crazy.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think that's, I think you kind of explained it exactly how it was. I mean, of course, I've tried to kind of like tried out different formats as, you know, time has gone on. I've tried, kind of being like mixing it up a little bit. So doing like a creator spotlight, which I'll still do every so often. But yeah, I mean, it was kind of just that. I mean, I had this idea of like, okay, what would I want to see? Like, if I wanted new things to watch and I wanted a reason to watch them and I wanted to be like compelled enough to like go to my TV and like, you know, add it to my queue or whatever, what would I need? So that was kind of like the framing that I saw, and especially in the beginning, it was very much like what would help me in this specific situation. And that was kind of like what came to mind. It was this thing of like, okay, you know, this video, it was also really important to me to make sure that like, I was, you know, in a sense, like citing the source. Like I wanted to make sure that it was like very clear that like the things I was saying, like, of course I had my additional commentary in there and like my thoughts thrown in, but like the goal was like, this is what I learned from this specific video that's behind me. So that was also something like I really am continue to be very interested in like making sure that I'm like, you know, propping up these creators and really kind of being like, they said this thing and I really like it. And here are my other thoughts.
going back to the beginning of the newsletter. So you started it February 8th, 2023, I think was the first issue. Why did you like, I know you wanted to like make a thing to talk about video essays, but like why exactly did you choose to start a newsletter about video essays besides just like being interested in video essays?
Yeah. So I think like that was, so early last year was like a very pivotal time in my career, as you could say. I was working in PR for about like 7 years up to that point. And the company I was working with had like mass round of layoffs, and my position was one of the ones that was cut. And it was, you know, pretty much immediately kind of saw it as an opportunity of like, okay, this could be a path forward for the next thing. I didn't know what that thing was. It could have, you know, could have been another job. You know, it didn't really cross my mind to like start a newsletter of my own immediately, but, you know, kind of over time and like during that downtime that I had, you know, like in between jobs, as you could say, I kind of came across like, I had known that like newsletters and Substacks were like a big, like community and like a big, you know, sector, but I really didn't understand the extent of it. And once I got a greater understanding of it, I was like, oh, like I could do this. It was this real feeling of like, this could be me. Like I could write a newsletter. You know, my background in PR really kind of prepared me for the type of writing that newsletters, or that like, you know, works really well in newsletters, like kind of that like succinct, quippy, but also like really meant to like grab people's attention. I mean, the entire pitching process for anyone who's familiar with, PR is literally a bulk email, like a newsletter in some way. In some capacities, you can draw some comparisons there. And I've always enjoyed writing, and I always liked, really enjoy this idea of like being able to find my own writing voice. I think that's something that's still being worked out. So that was kind of like my first thought was like, okay, I definitely want to do a newsletter. I don't know what about, but like, I'm interested in this, like whatever this could be. And then, you know, as I kind of thought about it, the idea for like, you know, video essay curation really came to me. It felt specific, and it felt like it could be too specific. Like it felt like it could be a little bit too out there. But, you know, once I kind of like really started to do it and really kind of, like I pretty much immediately was like, okay, yes, this is what I'm going to do. I kind of went full steam ahead, like set up a domain and all of that, like over the course of a day, like was really like probably the idea came to me like mid-January, and by early April, I was sending out the first issue. And that was just like, yeah, it was really like this thing of like an idea that kind of hit me, and I was like, this could work, but it also could not work. And I have the time, and like, I'm going to do this for as long as it makes sense.
Yeah, no, which I love. I mean, that's what it's all about. It's just about like having the idea and then doing it. I'm curious, who is your audience, and what's your relationship with them?
Yeah. So my audience, for the most part, in terms of like really like metrics, like the vast majority is like 18 to 34, like that kind of range. And I think more so like leans more towards like the 25 to 34 range. So like kind of like me.
Other people who've grown up with YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. People who have grown up with YouTube and who have been in the space for long enough to understand like the different sectors of it and the different trends that kind of come up within it and are interested in this one. So yeah. And I think my audience, I think there's a lot that I have in common with my audience. They just like to learn about things. And I think kind of going back to the blurb that I had in this week's newsletter, where it was like, if you think I don't let you enjoy things, like wait till you watch this video. I think can you just let me enjoy things? Like if there's anyone who's not my audience, it's that. because I've talked about this a lot, like in the newsletter, and not in a way that's any sort of like not in a way that's like snarky at all. Like I think people should be allowed to enjoy things if they want to, I mean, by all means, but I think for me, my audience is definitely those people that are like, you know, learning things and learning why we do the things that we do is part of what makes it fun and interesting to participate in it. And sometimes you learn things that you're like, okay, maybe this isn't great. Maybe I shouldn't, you know, be doing this or, you know, whatever. And I think that's fine. And you should be learning about those too. But I think it's really, I think like the main thing is like people who, you know, don't just want to kind of like move through their lives and the culture and the internet and social media and their interactions with people without kind of taking a second guess as to like why they're doing the things they're doing, why they're going to the places they're going, why they're seeing the things they're seeing, why they're wearing the things they're wearing. Like, you know, and I think that was something kind of going back to like the idea of finding your people like through the internet and through YouTube. That was always something that like always felt like, you know, that very relatable experience of like thinking that you're like one of one in a situation, and then you kind of go on the internet and you're like, oh, this is the least original thing ever. Like, turns out there's a lot of people who, you know, like doing the same thing.
Yeah. So when I was looking at your TikTok, the most interesting thing to me, I went down, control F, looked for all the ones where you were replying, to a comment. And again, going back to your audience and your relationship with them, one, I think that's like a really effective way of communicating with your audience. You're like really lucky to have like this audience on TikTok and on the newsletter. But my favorite of these videos was one where somebody asked you, like, does it get exhausting constantly examining and dissecting every aspect of life? Can we not do things without ascribing meaning to them? And I really enjoyed your video that responding to them. And it's basically the same thing you just said. And like, I mean, for context, like I went to a liberal arts school and like studied media studies. So like, I also very much,
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that like, that is so important. And like, that's, again, that's what curation is about. It's like, here's why this is good. And like, here's what you learn from doing it. Like my impression, let me know if this is a fair assessment of your project, is like the most simplified thesis is that like no cultural product exists in a vacuum, and it's like it's good to understand why things are the way they are, and like that's basically what you try to do with Deep Dive.
Exactly, that's exactly it. I think I think it's like people can ascribe whatever meaning or however little meaning they want to whatever it is that they want, but I think for me it's like, yeah, it's exactly that. Like nothing happens in a vacuum, and you know, sometimes it's for like things that are really silly. And sometimes it's like, you know, the meaning, the real meaning behind something or the context that something came in is like very funny. And sometimes it's like really serious and something it's really big. But either way, it's, you know, for the people who want to know what it is and kind of want to hear a little bit more about that, that's definitely what the deep dive is for.
Yeah. So one more indulgent term I came up with while doing my background research on you, gatekeeping, obviously a word that comes up a lot and no longer really means anything. But I think, hear me out. I think like what a curator is, what you're doing, you're gate creating, you're a gate creator, which is really annoying. But I think the term is annoying. I think what I mean by that though is like you're creating a gate into a certain type of meaning, and you're like assembling these things, and you're like, you're creating a portal into like understanding the world, and like other people don't have to be the types of people to like really go through and like think about every YouTube video they watch. But like you offer that as a service, you offer like understanding the world better as a service. So I don't know. Do you like that gate? Annoying as the term is, gate creator. Like, do you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. It's this thing of like, you know, especially with the idea of like even creating that gate for people to go to, right? Like the people who like wouldn't have known it was there otherwise, but like want to see what's there, or I guess what's behind it, you know, to kind of play into the analogy a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly it. And I think, it is so interesting being a curator right now, because like, it's so many things, but it's also like, it's the kind of thing that only can really come up in this like media environment that we're in right now, where there's just so much like, It's like so much to the point where not even algorithms can really help us anymore. It's like we've almost made a full circle back to a place where we need someone to be like, okay, what about these? Do you like these? Like,
which is
you
good.
May not, but you also might.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's so much muck. Like somebody's got to. Yeah. So many of the people I talk to, it's like you're wading through the muck as a service. Yeah. The email that's going out this Friday, the feature is Ryan Broderick, who does Garbage Day. And my like, I don't know if this is what is going to be the final subject line, but my like pithy subject line is like, he's dumpster diving the internet so we don't have to.
I like that.
And that's kind of what you're doing too. But anyways, I want to get into the newsletter, the stats, the numbers. So the typical numbers, how many subscribers do you have? What's the open rate and what's the click rate?
Yeah. So subscribers, I have my notes up here. So my subscribers is at 13,400, I think almost 13,500. Open rate is 58% and click rate is like hovers around 8% most weeks. But those are kind of like raw numbers for that.
Those are good numbers. I mean, it makes sense, the click rate, because I think the industry click rate average is like 1 point something or 2. So, I mean, people come to you to find a video to watch, which like, actually that's another thing. What you do is like, almost like whenever it's like, you know, 8, p.m. on a Friday and I'm staying in, and like, we'll look up like, oh, what to stream on Netflix right now. And there's like an article from Vulture about like, here's the 10 things you should be streaming. Right. You do that, but just for YouTube. But anyways, we've delved into that plenty. I read an interview. It was behind a paywall, so I only read part of it, but I read an interview with Kate from Embedded on You. That was like a year ago, and only like 4 months after you'd started, and you already had 6,500 subscribers. So how did you get so many subscribers so quickly? That's like quite a lot for the first few months.
TikTok really acted as, or has been acting this entire time as like my main funnel for gaining subscribers. So in every TikTok video I make, I'll include like a mention of the newsletter, you know, and it's really interesting because even that, like the way that I've introduced the newsletter in the TikToks themselves has evolved over time. I think in the beginning, my PR brain wouldn't let me not present the newsletter in like a very like press release format. It's like, this is what it is, and this is what I do, and this is how much it is, which is free. And like, these are all the things. But I've learned that like over time, the more the mention is in passing, the lot, like it can be a lot more effective given, I mean, of course it depends on the context that, you know, it's in. But yeah, that's kind of been the main funnel, obviously, like link in bio, and just like mentioning the newsletter in the vast majority of the TikToks that I make. That's kind of been the main, kind of growth avenue for that.
Yeah. That's really interesting. And that's always like, I hear people who are like internet writing gurus talk about how like you have to unlearn everything you learned in school about writing and intros, conclusions, et cetera. And it's like, you're kind of talking about that, like with like what you learned in PR. So I don't know. I'd like to talk more about that. Like, is there anything else that like you learned from PR that you've had to, that like works in like the marketing world, but that you've had to unlearn for this?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like, I think there's a lot of things, but they all kind of root back to the same thing of like giving all the information up front. I mean, something that you learn, it's funny because like when you start working in PR, you have to unlearn all of the ways that you like write in school. You have to write really quickly, really like succinctly. It has to be very short. You can't bury the lead. Like burying the lead is like, you know, crime number one in PR. Like you have to be so upfront about what's going on. If you've ever seen a press release, just like you read it and you're like, all right, that's all the information. That's at the very least all the information that this brand has about like whatever it is that's going on. And I think that's something that is like, it's a real instinct that's like hammered into you from the beginning. So when I kind of like ventured into newsletters, I really learned that, or I really had to like be forced to learn that less is more sometimes. Sometimes it's enough to just say like, you know, I'll be talking about this. And that's something that I'm, you know, kind of working with right now, like with the rabbit hole kind of like, you know, like mentioning it, like making mention to it in the newsletter itself. I obviously don't want to like detract from like the main point of the newsletter itself, but also still want to say like, hey, this is what's coming up on the rabbit hole. And that's also been like a lot of, you know, trial and error of like the more information you give sometimes, the more it kind of like works against you. Because sometimes people just don't want to wade through a bunch of stuff when it's not really like the exact point why, like of like why they're there to begin with. But yeah, I mean, I think it is so interesting the ways that working in PR has helped me so much in the newsletter space, and the ways that it's like, I didn't even realize I had to unlearn until so far into it, where I was like, oh, like, cause I think the way I kind of came to that conclusion was that there was one video that I kind of just like forgot to mention the newsletter. So I added like a little like, oh, by the way, like link in bio. And that just, for whatever reason, that just really worked. And I was like, oh, okay. Like this is what people want when they're watching these TikToks. Like this is how they want to be directed to something that is like outside of the platform they're currently on.
Yeah. That's fascinating. So 6,500 in like the first 4 months, and now about the same amount in a full year. And is there anything other than TikTok, or is it like just TikTok?
It's mostly just TikTok. I mean, of course, Beehive I have the referral program set up through Beehive. So I've had like a few hundred, I think at this point, come through that. But yeah, I think it's like in looking at my analytics and honestly just kind of what's making sense, like TikTok has been like definitely the main driver of growth from there.
That's amazing. I do want to talk about the rabbit hole. So this is your premium offering, and you started it in September. And I think one thing that's really interesting about it is like you kind of pitch it, you mention it as like a separate newsletter almost. Like it's obviously the premium, like other people would say like the premium version of the deep dive, but it's like you say like it's almost like your sister newsletter. I don't know exactly how you term it, but it's like it's separate. So yeah, tell me why you started it, what it is. what, yeah, why you started it and what it is.
Yeah. So I kind of just started it because, you know, for a long time, I really was like, once I kind of got to a place where I was like, okay, the deep dive is something that is like not sustaining itself, obviously, because I'm, you know, putting in that work every week. But once I kind of got into a groove of like how things were working and, you know, the cadence and everything, I kind of reached a point where I was like, okay, well, kind of going back to that whole thing of like, I have more to say, like, do I know what it is always? No, but like I do think there's some opportunity here to kind of expand into thoughts that are a little bit like more personal and that have like more of my, like, you know, just like commentary and opinions like injected into them. And, you know, that was something that I was obviously like really interested in doing on TikTok. And I think for me, I was like, okay, this is a good opportunity to kind of expand that into like a premium option too. And in terms of like naming it the rabbit hole, honestly, the reason I did that was just like, I just thought it would be fun to have like a name. I think sometimes it's like a nice identifier for the people who are at that level to kind of say like, oh, I'm part of the rabbit hole, or oh, I'm a subscriber to the rabbit hole, even if it's like part of the same newsletter. But really kind of where the rabbit hole started, it's honestly evolved a lot. It's still pretty new. And it's just like a constant work in progress, lots of trial and error. It started off as like, oh, maybe I'll do my own research on like topics that I'm interested in. And I think that was something that like, I'm definitely interested in doing and definitely like doing, but it wasn't sustainable as far as like a weekly thing. And I wanted to make sure that like anything I was putting out, like was being well researched and wasn't just like, you know, like I wanted to make sure that I was able to put the time and effort into it that I needed. And now it's kind of like somewhere along the way, I introduced the searchable playlist, which I explained basically searchable, sortable, filterable playlist with all of my recommendations. And that really came from a place of people being like, I love 40-minute video essays, people would say. They'd be like, I watch these over my lunch break at work, and 40 minutes is the perfect amount of time for me to go grab my food, walk to wherever, watch this video, and go back. Same thing with people who like watch while they're working out or doing laundry. Like that was like a big feedback that I was getting. It was like, I like these 40-minute video essays. Like I just want to see the video essays that are 40 minutes long. So that was introduced along the way. And now it's really kind of operating as like an additional thought. So it's like every week it'll kind of be like a write-up on a specific just like happening or something I've noticed, or just like, you know, maybe it's inspired by videos I saw that week, or maybe it's just something that's like completely outside of all of that. But that's kind of like where the rabbit hole is operating right now.
Yeah, I think the Patreon comparison is really apt because it does feel like, again, your concept with the deep dive is so dialed in, and it's so consistently like the 5 videos, a couple hundred words on each, and that's it. Whereas like I read a few of the rabbit holes, and they're like personal essay media criticism combos, and like sometimes they're 800 words. One was 3,500 words, I think. And it's like, that was an interview. That was an interview. So that makes sense that one was longer. But yeah, so the length varies, and like what there are varies, which I like. Are you willing to share like how many premium subscribers you have? It's okay if not.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the specific number, I didn't write it down. But it's definitely still like less than that 1% threshold, but I don't have.
So besides that, so is that, I know you have some ads. So are these the two ways you're monetizing right now? Premium subscriptions and then some ads. And then I think also the ads are, it doesn't look like it's like Beehive ad network ads. It looks like you're like, one of them I think was like for like a video festival or something like that. Yeah. So yeah, tell me about your advertising process as well.
Yeah. So it's like three main modes of, but yeah, what you were saying is spot on.
Oh, the
so
monetization
it's
modes, yeah.
The ads, the rabbit hole, and the TikTok creator program. They pay out creators for like videos that they make and however many. That obviously fluctuates all over the place, but those are kind of like my three main things now. And the deep dive has only recently gotten to a place where we're like cracking that like monetization of like, you know, making any sort of like monetization from it. Before, for a long time, I was kind of just like, okay. But yeah, so I think that's the, but yeah, going back to the what you were saying about ads, a lot of the time it is Beehive ads. And, you know, definitely like one of the reasons I joined Beehive is because of that like ad network. And it was like, I really, you know, it was really, I just thought it was such a great idea to be able to act as kind of like this middleman between brands and newsletters. Because again, that was one of my jobs working in PR, and I know how difficult it is to find brands at that exact moment in time where they're looking for advertising opportunities. So that was like, that was, one of those things. But yeah, I think the one that you're talking about is, Strong Towns, which is a YouTube channel, but they're also like some sort of organization that really prioritizes like better city planning, like creating better cities and that aren't so like suburban sprawly and like you need a car to get everywhere and you don't have access to public transportation. Like that's kind of their main goal. And they're having a conference, you know, sometime this month. And they reached out to me and they were like, you know, we'd love to invite you, like we'll give you a code. You know, and we'd really love to see you there and any subscribers that you have, there. So every so often I'll get like ad opportunities, like things like that, or like affiliate opportunities like that. But have definitely made great use out of the Beehive ads network as well. So it's kind of just like balancing those two.
Another Beehive feature you use, is the referral system, which referrals are hard. So I recently two weeks ago, launched one in Creator Spotlight, and it's like this guide of like 30 growth tips, etc. And it's hard to get people to click on that. Yeah, and we did it just one because it's like nobody is going to do too many, you know, many more people are going to do one than even two or three, etc. So I think you have two for you gets podcast recs, five gets stickers, 10 gets a tote. Exactly. How's that going? And has anybody hit the tote level yet?
Yes, people have hit the tote level, but yeah, amazing. Like very few, like very small handful of people have hit the tote level. But yeah, I think that's something, the referral one, it's so interesting because it's like, it's, like 100%, like you said, it is so difficult to get people. I mean, honestly, it's difficult to get people to do anything outside of the thing that they're doing in the moment. Like anything that you can do that'll make them migrate elsewhere at all and do anything at all is like a huge win. But yeah, you're 100%, but the vast majority of people that are referring people are referring one person. But honestly, like, that doesn't bother me. I think like, what I like about that is this idea of like, oh, I have this one friend who I think would really like this.
It goes back to like forwarding emails in 2006, right? Because exactly. Yours is such a good one to do that with. It's like, it's a very easy proposition to forward the deep dive. Just anybody can find something interesting there, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And so that's kind of like the thing with me. It's like, you know, of course it's like, do I wish there were more people that hit the 5 or the 10 level? Totally. But I also like, I do try to like remind myself that it's like, even the people that were like, send it to their one friend who they thought would like it. And now it's something they bond over. Like, that's something that like, that was like really what I wanted to do. And like my original like intention with the deep dive to begin with, but yeah, it's honestly difficult. And like getting to the 5 and 10 tiers is like, not many people have done it. Which props to them for doing it, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's impressive. Okay. You've been doing this for 15 months. Mm-hmm. Really, you've only just begun. Where are you with this 15 months from now?
Gosh, I don't know. That's a question I ask myself all the time. you know, it's so funny because I do try to stay hyper aware of the fact that like anything, this could very well be an internet trend. And we've seen lots of them. I mean, at this point, like especially people that are like around our age, I think we've seen so many faces of the internet at this point. So it's like, it's this thing of like, this feeling of like, I should be prepared, even like, I'm really enjoying what I'm doing now. And I want to continue to do, you know, what I'm doing for as long as I enjoy it, but also be aware of like ways that I'm going to need to pivot in order to kind of be able to fit with like the internet, the changing internet trends of the time. It's kind of like being realistic in that sense. So I hope like, I guess what I hope for 15 months from now is that like, if there were any sort of pivots that, you know, made sense for the ecosystem that will have been at that point, that, you know, I'm finding my place in that, or at least like know where, I would want to explore that a little bit. I think, I definitely see myself like continuing to just like watch YouTube, enjoy YouTube, recommend YouTube to people, even if YouTube does go through kind of like these phases of existence, which again, I think that's really interesting too. Like I really like observing the way that, you know, things change over time and how YouTube changes over time because it's changed so much. It's like really this thing of like, you know, sticking with what works well, but also being able to identify like when things are moving and like what is interesting for me when, you know, that progression does happen.
Yeah. I didn't really think about this until just now too, but like, of course the TikTok ban and like, I don't think you're really on Reels yet. And like, you're going to have to get on Reels and such. But I think you're in terms of like the trends coming and going, right? Like newsletters, I think maybe this is like a moment where newsletters are so popular, but it's also like such a cyclical thing. Newsletters were like a thing from the 90s, and then it was blogging, and now it's this, and it's all just writing online, right? And I mean, then there's the AI question about like AI search, and we don't need to go down there. I don't particularly care to go down that route. What are the three lessons? Could be from anything, like a life lesson, something about being a creator, something about video essays, about writing, etc. Three things you've learned in the past 15 months from doing this.
Ooh, okay. I'm thinking of like two right now. I might have to think on the third. I think the first and foremost one, and this might sound a little bit cliche, but it's truly something I'm constantly reminding myself of, is this idea of like truly doing what's working for you and what you enjoy. I can never get this quote right. It's like being a first rate version of yourself as opposed to a second rate version of someone else. That's something that I always try to really remember, because you never know what the thing is that you're doing that could be, you know, paving a way for something entirely new. You know, I think it's easy to kind of get into this idea of like, oh, but there's this really great newsletter and I want to be like that. And maybe I should do things more like that newsletter. And obviously you should be drawing inspiration from people and work that is resonating with you, but also at the same time, like understanding like what you bring to the table that's unique that like no one really else can. I think another thing, and this might be like, this is kind of like, but I think for me, like prioritizing specifically for newsletters, like prioritizing organic growth, I feel like has been so great for me. I think that's really been helpful for me. And it's something that like, I definitely would recommend, even if it is slower, even if it takes a little bit longer, even if it requires like, you know, I wouldn't say more effort, because sometimes even getting like paid growth takes a lot of work and a lot of effort. But this idea of like not being afraid of like slow growth or I guess like periods of time of slow growth, because those are really the opportunities that you get to recalibrate and be like, okay, where am I now? And what do I want to be doing? And is this what I want to be doing? Is there anything I want to change? I feel like that's been something that's been really helpful for me, like not getting so caught up in these moments where, you know, you'll have moments of fast growth and that's great. And you're kind of just like swept up into it. And by the time it ends, you're like, all right, like, let's like hope we're still holding on and everything's still working. But like not being afraid of those. And
No, you can pause for a second and think of the third one, because I want to touch on some of that. I think, both of those two are kind of cliche, right? But it's all it is. Like it all comes down to that. And like, you know, there's all the different like growth tactics, et cetera, that you can do. And, you know, I put that together in the Creator Growth Almanac. I really think, it's just like, especially you have to be doing just something that you're interested in. Like, again, I'm not going to sit and watch 24 hours of video essays in 2 days. I will sit and like, you know, I probably spent like 4 hours researching you before this. And then I'll spend like however many, like 4 or 5 hours putting to 10 hours, et cetera, putting together the newsletter and all this stuff. And it's like, it's because I like doing that and that's fun. And like, this is also my full-time job. And like, that's a lot. I'm lucky to have that, but like, I like doing that. And I like looking stuff up online and like putting together a story. And everybody I talk to who is like good at this and who's built an audience, they are just doing something they like to do and like would be doing otherwise. And you would be watching, you know, maybe not 24 hours in 2 days or whatever, but you'd be watching a lot of videos otherwise. And you always have been. And it's like, if you'd started this newsletter a few years earlier, like maybe it'd be somewhere else. It's like, it doesn't matter. You started it then. And like your growth is like insane. Like most people are not going to get that many subscribers in the first few months, let alone like in the first year. But yeah, I think it's like, do what you love. You'll never work a day in your life. But it's like when you're like a creator and like doing this thing for yourself, it's like you're going to actually be doing it every day of your life. So like you better love it. It's more of like a threat almost. Exactly. But then the other thing, your level of organic growth is quite rare. I think like most people don't take to like TikTok or Twitter or whatever, or LinkedIn as well as you have. So I don't know. I'm not sure though. Again, I think it goes back to the first point, because I don't know if that's something you can like teach. Like you can teach like principles, but you have to like enjoy sitting down and like doing the little selfie camera and then like and talking about the thing. Like, and that's all it is. So like, it's like, I mean, kudos to you. It's like very impressive what you've been able to do on TikTok. But like, again, that just goes back to the first point for me of like, you better love doing what you're doing. Oh, and my last thing on that, on the organic growth thing is like, I think a lot of people think that like participation in the creator economy is like a merit leverageable lottery where like you can make a lot of money and you get big, get famous, et cetera, get your 15 minutes of fame. And that all you need to do is like have a little bit of skills, which you can learn quickly online. And I think a lot of people make a lot of money selling courses on that, et cetera. But I think that like, again, like it's not that lottery, like, which this still just goes back to that first point of you better enjoy doing it or you're going to have no fun at all. Anyways.
And it's like creating. And I think like also it's like creating the thing that you would want, because chances are you're not the only person that has a need for something. Like if you feel like there is something that you could provide that would be an addition to somebody's life and would be, you know, the reason that they are excited to open their emails on Wednesday mornings, like, that I think that's something that it's definitely at the very least it's a good start. Like wherever that ends up, some of it is teachable, but a lot of it is hard. And it's like there isn't one person's like rise to success that could be replicated in its exact way. Like even that one person, if they did it kind of like at another time or place, like
this lock, etc.
Yeah, completely. Like there's so much else at play. Your best bet is to do the thing that you enjoy and that you think will add value and that, like, you know, as far as you know, only you could do.
Thank you for joining me. Thank you, listener, for listening. Aya, tell them where to find you.
So you can find me on TikTok at Deep Dive Newsletter, and you can find me at the Deep Dive Newsletter website, which is www.deepdivenewsletter.com.